Whether your favorite season is winter, spring, summer, or fall,
I found the switch. All right. There we go. Thank you, Brother Ken, for the hand motions. All right. So whether your favorite season is winter, spring, summer, or fall, each of those seasons have storms in them. Whether your least favorite season is winter, spring, summer, or fall, that season has storms in it. And I know families in this church, including my own, you know, we all have our own storms and we all have our own burdens to carry. And you may not know mine and I may not know yours, but we're all in this together. And we get to carry this through this human experience. Let's look a little bit at Ecclesiastes chapter 3. To everything there is a season, and a time to every purpose under the heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up that which was planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to get and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to cast away. A time to rend and a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. We should probably read that verse a few times. A time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. Verse 9, what profit hath he that worketh in therewith, wherein he hath laboreth? I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised in it. Now listen closely to this next verse. He hath made everything beautiful in his time, and he hath set the world in their heart so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. So this verse, to me, I kind of looked at my study Bible and it enlightened it a little bit for me. It talks about all these seasons, and as hard as it is for us, we're to see it as beautiful because it's God's beautiful work. And it's not all going to be easy, and it's not all going to be fun, and it's not all going to be peaceful. God gives us a mind of eternal things, but he doesn't tell us everything. So in this, there's a trust that even though we can't see how to get there, and we can't see what the next move is, and we don't know how we're going to make it, we have to trust that God knows. And God has a plan. And God has set it all in motion with a purpose. And it's all beautiful. It's hard for our human minds to understand that. And I'm going to stop there because I can't explain it. But I can say it because my Bible says it. I can repeat it. Okay. All right. Got that off my chest. Let's move into the lesson here that I prepared. And we're going to be talking about the fishes and the loaves tonight, the fragments associated with that. And let's just kind of set the stage here. At the wedding, Jesus told his mother that his time had not come. He said, "My time has not come." Jesus was gathering his disciples and building up to a great reveal that hadn't happened yet. But there was a point when the frenzy around Jesus reached its height. The story of the healer, the miracle worker, the prophet, the one that Think about all these instances. The one that told me everything that I had done, he was being talked about. The one that healed the leper on the Sabbath, he was showing his power. Made the blind to see and the lame to walk. The one that spoke as no man ever before. Is he Elijah? Is he Moses? People were confused. There was a lot of chaos around Jesus. Is he here to rule and overthrow? He was a threat. People in power and in positions of prominence were threatened by him and concerned that he could move people with his voice, with his word. He could move masses of people and change their lives. So let's pick up on this story at a time when the buzz was really high and tensions were starting to peak around Jesus. Jesus was in the limelight. He was giving of himself every moment. You know, it cost Jesus something as he poured out into people. The woman with the issue of blood that touched the hem of his garment, that took virtue from Jesus. That took energy from Jesus. And he was a man on this earth giving his energy. He was God on this earth in a man's body giving this energy for everyone around him. The story I want to focus on stands between the story of the fishes and loaves. It stands between two other great events that I want to point out. We're at a time where the frenzy's high. You guys remember John the Baptist was put in prison. John the Baptist was beheaded, and this was Jesus' cousin, very close to him. He was the forerunner, the most faithful, and the first disciple. He was the baptizer of Jesus. Jesus had just received the news in this scenario that John the Baptist had been killed, that he'd been martyred. His head was delivered, and the disciples went and gathered up his body and took care of him. Yet in this moment, Jesus still gave himself. He was moved with compassion toward the people. And after that scene was concluded, Jesus sent the disciples away toward Capernaum. You guys may remember this story. The sea rose of a great wind. They saw Jesus walking on the water. Peter called out. Then Peter walked out. And then instantly, or immediately, is the way the Bible talks about it, they were on shore at their destination. Jesus had tipped over at this point to where he wasn't holding back anymore. He was revealing his power. And the fever pitch was happening around him that he was about to be taken to be crucified. He was demonstrating, he was creating stories, and these stories are what we have today, right now, to understand the nature of God in our Bible. So in the midst of this, in the midst of this moment in Jesus' life, I want to see what God would have for us in the story of the loaves and fishes. The moment after Jesus healed on the Sabbath, and after John the Baptist was beheaded for standing for the truth, and the moments before Jesus walked on water, before he walked on water, we find ourselves in the book of John, chapter 6. If you'll turn there, we're going to read for a moment. John chapter 6. After these things, the things that we just described, Jesus went over to the Sea of Galilee, which is in the Sea of Tiberias. And a great multitude followed him because they saw his miracles which he did on them that were diseased. And Jesus went up into a mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. And the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was nigh. When Jesus then lifted up his eyes and saw a great company coming to him, he said unto Philip, "Whence shall we buy bread that these may eat?" Okay, verse 6. And this he said to prove him, for he knew what he would do. Jesus never asked a question that he didn't already know an answer to. Philip answered and said, 200 penny worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may take a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon, Peter's brother, said unto him, "There is a lad here which hath five barley loaves and two small fishes, but what are they among so many? Verse 10, and Jesus said, make the men to sit down. Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down in the number of around 5,000. And Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed to the disciples, and the disciples to them that were sat down, and likewise of the fishes as much as they would. Verse 12, and when they were filled, he said to the disciples, gather up the fragments that remain, that nothing be lost. Therefore they gathered them together and filled 12 baskets with the fragments of the 5 barley loaves which remained over and above unto them that had eaten. Just take a moment to let that story sink in and what actually happened there. Jesus, in front of over 5,000 people, some believe it was more like 7,000 to 10,000 because it describes it as the men sitting down, and they might have had their families with them to some extent. He demonstrated his power as the Messiah in front of a mass of people. He was saying to the world, go ahead and tell it. Let's go ahead and bring this thing to a head. And I am the Messiah. I am God. The supply of this story was 5 barley loaves. That turns out to be the cheap food of the time, the food of the commoners. 2 small fishes. And fishes, because that's the way it reads in the Bible, but the fish were described as small. The writer wanted to make sure that we knew these weren't 400-pound tuna that everyone was feasting on. These were small fishes. To illustrate, the supply was insufficient for what they had to do. This is the heart of what I'm talking about tonight. The lad offered the little that he had in an act of obedience. He brought the fish and the loaves. They were his. Jesus is not going to take them. The lad had to offer it. And because he was willing to offer it, Jesus could do something with it. He offered it in obedience. The world seeks the strong and the capable. Jesus seeks the humble and obedient. Brother Ken has said this many times, but no matter your talents and gifts, no matter your strengths and your abilities, you will never do greater than what God can do with one small act of humble obedience. We got nothing to offer. We got nothing. We've got no power to change anything, but God can. He can do it in an obedient life. He can do it when he decides to, but he can do it in an obedient life. You see, 2 things are happening in the story. The lad, he had to bring something to the scene, even if it was little. It'd be a good idea to have something, have some substance about us. The lad had to offer it to Christ in obedience. As I said, Jesus didn't take it by force. Once in Jesus' hands, he blessed it, he broke it, he multiplied it, and he distributed it. Only God has that power. Satan seeks to tear down and destroy. Satan seeks to minimize. Satan seeks to take away. Jesus always adds. He always multiplies. When all was done and bellies were filled, as well as the 12 baskets of fragments, God can take our little obedience and do tremendous things with it. Well, Brother Randy, we already talked about we all have our troubles, and my situation is bad. You just don't get it, okay? There's no hope. Well, I would encourage you to find a fragment of hope and be obedient with it and see what God can do. My job's killing me. I get no joy, no purpose from it. Maybe if you can find a fragment of purpose and be obedient with it and see what God will do with that. Maybe you can be in subjection to that boss instead of pushing back all the time. Honor that blessing of a job and see what God will do with it. God can make... I had a situation, I'll just say it, a few years ago. where we had a new leader come in, and he and I did not click. We were polar opposites. And people were coming to me saying, you better find another role because he is out to get you. He's going to get you and you're going to be done. And I had at least five people tell me that. And he acted like it. I mean, it was on. It was on. So I decided, I'm not claiming to be this spiritual person or anything special, but I decided, well, I'm just going to pray for him every day. All I can do is my job, do my very best. I feel like I'm doing good things. For whatever reason, he doesn't value my style. I get it. Okay. But I'm going to pray for him every day. So that's what I did. He was a bit abusive. He was difficult. Still prayed for him every day. Eventually, things changed. It went from you're done to now I'm the one that fills in for him when he's out. Now he's asking for things, for me to get into things in the kind of the private circle. God can do anything. That's not because I'm anything great, because I was the same guy that was going to be pushed out as I was that was brought in. The difference is God made a change in that situation. He did it for me. And it wasn't short, by the way. This wasn't two weeks of fun for me. This was 2 years. 2 years of intensity. But God can do it if we can be obedient, and God can change things. If he can do it for me, he can do it in your situation. My life is at the bottom. I've messed it up. I have no dignity. I have no energy left to move through this situation. Find a fragment of energy and be obedient with it. See what God can do. Take a step with dignity and be obedient with it and see what God can do with the next steps that follow. My marriage is upside down. There's no love. Maybe find a fragment of love. Be obedient with it. See what God can do with it. My spiritual life is without prayer, study. It's in the dumps. Anybody ever been there? Don't raise your hand, because I know we've all been there to some extent. Find a fragment in your spiritual life. Be obedient with it and see what God will do. Once we put the little things, our feeble efforts, with obedience in God's hands, he can bless it. He can multiply it. He can solve it. It doesn't always happen tomorrow. It doesn't always happen next week. But God can do it on his own time. If we can offer our obedience, God can and will use that to care for us and others. The book of 1 Samuel, I'll just read it, chapter 15, verse 22. You can turn if you want, but you don't have to. And Samuel said, "Hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams." Scripture says our obedience is the best thing that we can offer. God can do the most with that. Bring your charisma, it won't be enough. Work harder, still won't be enough. Stand on your talent, even though we have some very talented people in here, it won't be enough. Give of your riches, it won't be enough. I mean, how rich do you think you are anyway? God owns it all. There are people with billions upon billions of dollars that don't impress God with their riches. Shower us with your wisdom, and it will not be enough. I see a lot of our wisdom out there on social media. I promise you it's not enough. Just kidding. I never look at social media. I could care less. I missed that bus, and I'm trying not to get on the AI bus. And when I retire, I'm hoping to go off the grid and go back to the 90s. I missed the 90s. You missed the 90s? I missed the 90s. Some of you miss the 70s and 80s, don't you? 60s, okay. But if we humble ourselves obediently and hand over that which we have to God, all that we have, which is not enough, is suddenly enough for us and for all those around us. It does matter to people around us, our obedience. Let's turn over to the book of John, chapter 4. We'll go into chapter 4 now, in verse 10. I'm going to catch this story kind of midway through because I think this Wednesday night crowd knows it. Jesus answered and said unto her, "If thou knewest the gift of God and who it is that saith to thee, give me to drink, thou wouldest have asked him, and he would have given thee living water." The woman said unto him, "Sir, thou hast nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. From whence then hast thou this living water? Art thou greater than the father Jacob, which gave us the well and drank thereof, and his children and his cattle?" The answer is yes, Jesus is greater than all those. 13, Jesus answered and said unto her, "Whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again, but whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst, but the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up unto everlasting life." That's what Jesus has to offer us. Suddenly, that which is insignificant and not enough spills over the cup, into the saucer, and off the table. That's what Jesus can do in our lives. We're all going to go through seasons. There are going to be good seasons. There are going to be bad seasons. There are going to be trying seasons. There are going to be seasons of joy. Intermingled with all that, we don't escape the fact that there's going to be storms. There's going to be trouble. Sometimes the burden is so heavy you don't know what you're going to do. I would just encourage each of us tonight, including me, this is as much for me as anyone, is to be obedient with a little bit, hand it to Jesus, and see what he can do for us. Thank you for your attention.